Next, we're going to hear Jeff Regan, private investigator, but not with Jack Webb. He left the show, and later Frank Graham took over. And this is called A Tree Grows in Encino, as we go back to April 5th, 1950, and Jeff Regan, private investigator, with Frank Graham.
My name's Regan. I work for Anthony J. Lyon, Detective Bureau. They call me the Lion's Eye.
Jeff Regan, investigator, starring Frank Graham as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. So stand by for mystery and suspense and adventure in tonight's story of A Tree Grows in Encino.
There was a confused redhead with cool lips and a hot temper. An interior decorator who didn't want his orange trees moved, and a strange little man who hired the Lyon Detective Agency to make sure he got himself convicted of murder. A real sensible case. It was about 5:30 lunchtime when I reported back to the Lyon's office to see what was on tap for the afternoon. Plenty was. Plenty in the form of a thin, haughty little man sitting across the desk from the Lyon. Anthony J. had his mouth wide open when I walked in.
Jeffrey, come in. I've been waiting for you. This is Mr.
McMurray. Jonathan McMurray.
McMurray, yes. Jeffrey, he thinks he needs our help.
Not sure yet, Mr. McMurray?
Yes, I am quite sure. It is your employer, Mr. Lyon, who is not sure.
Well, now, I wouldn't say that, Mr. McMurray. Yours is a very unusual case.
Suppose somebody tells me what this is all about.
Jeffrey, Mr. McMurray...
I will explain my own problems, Mr. Lyon.
Yes, you explain them, Mac.
Mr. Regan, it's quite simple. I want you to prove I am guilty of murder.
What?
Quite simple, Jeffrey.
I have murdered my wife, Mr. Regan. I've gone to the police and confessed. They refuse to believe me. It's up to you to prove I'm right.
Up to us, Jeffrey.
Wait a minute, Fatso. Let's get all the story, Mac. You killed your wife and the police won't believe you? When?
On the morning of April 3rd at 3 a.m. 3 years ago.
3 years?
You see, Jeffrey, I told you this was
Mr. Lyon. I had gone to bed early the night of April 2nd. I heard noises several hours later. I assumed they were burglars. I went downstairs, taking my gun, of course, and saw a figure breaking in. Naturally, I fired. It was my wife.
Your wife breaking into your own house?
It seemed that way at the time. Perhaps I was not fully awake. We all make mistakes, you know.
All make mistakes.
Of course. I do not believe in murder. That is why I am here.
The police wouldn't believe you.
Nothing but a group of incompetent, immoral civil servants. Are we not paying them to establish law and order? I ask you, Mr. Regan, are we
Finish
not...
the story. What happened after you shot your wife?
In the moment of utter weakness, I lost my head. I fled the city.
And for 3 years you've hidden out. Only your conscience got to bothering you. You finally decided to...
Certainly not. The woman was dead. My problem was more basic, down to the very roots of nature. I wrestled, shall we say, with all the evil of the world, and won.
Where?
In San Francisco, where I had established myself in business. It was last week I decided that I must pay the price or live forever in a morass of sin. I have decided, Mr. Regan, to make an example of myself.
Jeffrey, perhaps we'd better explain to Mr. McMurray that we're pretty busy this season. Maybe someone else...
Wait a minute, Lyon. Mac, did you and your wife get along?
We quarreled constantly. When I married her, I had assumed she was a woman of some inner dignity and spirit. I discovered she was no better
than... What was his name?
I beg your pardon.
The other man.
There was no other man. She had not sunk that low. We quarreled about her work. It kept her out nights.
Her work kept her out nights?
Exactly. She was an interior decorator. Lois, that was her name. Lois was one of those soulless moderns. Form follows function, that sort of nonsense.
I take it you aren't modern.
I, sir, am an architect. An architect of the old school. I believe in the established order of things. You, Mr. Regan, are morally obligated to see that justice is done.
Jeffrey, do we have...
Man, they can't all make sense.
Gentlemen! Enough of this childish quibbling. I assure you, you are going to take my case.
We took the little man's case. We took it with cash in advance and both fingers crossed. The lion fumbled for his fountain pen while McMurray calmly waited with his open checkbook. There was only one place for me to go. The police.
They tell me you were looking for me, Regan.
Right, Lieutenant Cannon. Just the man I was looking for.
What's her name?
This time it's a him. Jonathan McMurray.
Never heard of him.
Well, it happened 3 years ago. Claims he shot his wife.
Never heard of him.
Wife's name was Lois. Interior decorator.
Oh, yeah. Blonde, about 5'5", blue eyes, age 28, weight 116. I remember.
You met her?
Nope. That was the description the husband filed with us yesterday when he came in. When you told me her name, I remembered.
Sure. Sure you did, Candid.
Regan, guys are a dime a dozen around a police station. But dames with nice measurements? Oh, that's something else.
Why didn't you book him, Candid?
Book him for what?
The murder of his wife.
Believe that nuts story? Are you kidding, Regan? Do I look like I've been on the force that long?
Candid, a man comes to you and confesses to a 3-year-old murder. He's got a motive and a complete story, and you turn him away.
Oh, take it easy, Regan. Mr. McMurray may like the coziness of the gas chamber, but it takes more than that to spend the taxpayers' money sending him there.
Like what?
Like a corpus delicti. A body. You should excuse the expression.
No body?
Regan, Lois McMurray, the little man's wife, disappeared 3 years ago. We can get at least 2 witnesses who say that when she got on the boat for South America, she wasn't dead. She was very much alive.
Made sense. Sure, real fine sense. Candid told me his witnesses. One, Howard Nelson Whitmore, interior decorator, extraordinary, the missing woman's ex-boss. The other witness, Mrs. Nelson Whitmore. They'd been with Lois McMurray the day she'd sailed. That was April 4th, the day after McMurray claimed he'd killed her. When a client buys $100 worth, you give him $100 worth. I checked the address of Howard Nelson Whitmore and drove out, Robertson Boulevard, Beverly Hills. It was chocolate brown and chalk white, and twisted plywood and copper wire hanging from the ceilings. Average family could live a year on the cost of 1 month's rent.
How do you do? May I help you, sir?
Like to see Mr. Whitmore.
You mean Mr. Nelson Whitmore. It's hyphenated, you know.
How wonderful. Could I see Mr. Nelson hyphen Whitmore?
Oh, didn't I tell you? He's in conference with his wife.
And we won't discuss the matter again, Howard. Is that clear?
Well, for the last time, it's absurd. Absolutely absurd.
We'll see how absurd it is after it's done, and it will be done, you understand?
This is the last time I'll put up with any of your fantastic schemes. Now get out!
You lame brain nincompoop out to...
Well... Hello.
Hello.
Where did you come from, stranger?
You're Mrs. Nelson Whitmore?
For the time being, but then, of course, all things change. You know that, don't you?
Sure, sure, all things change. Maybe you and I could talk about that.
Oh, I'm sure we could, Mr.
Regan. Jeff Regan.
I'm sure we could, Mr. Regan. My card. I'll be at home in an hour. Encino, just off Ventura. You can't miss it.
She was medium size and red hair and medium size and red hair. She drifted out of the place like a pneumatic cloud looking for a bolt of lightning. The secretary watched her leave and swallowed a couple of times and looked at me and swallowed a couple of times.
You may go in now, Mr. Regan.
I went in. Mr. Howard Nelson Whitmore looked florid behind his desk, his face flushed and his eyes liquid anger. He was holding a long steel letter opener, which he tapped steadily against the desk.
My secretary said you wished to speak to me, Mr. Regan.
Maybe I ought to come back later.
You can discuss whatever you wish to discuss right now.
Your wife always like that?
I said we could discuss your business now. Sorry. Sorry, old man.
Forget it.
It's just that sometimes... Sometimes she drives me nearly out of my mind with her schemes, her stupid, idiotic schemes.
Like what?
We have a small orange grove out in Encino. I shouldn't say grove, really. Only 10 trees.
She doesn't like oranges?
No, she wants them moved. Can you imagine that? She wants those 10 trees uprooted and transplanted to some other part of our land. She says they'll blend into the landscape better.
And you don't think so?
Of course I don't think so. planted those trees myself 3 years ago in the spring. And planted them where they are because that's where they belong.
Trees belong certain places, is that it?
I will not have you questioning me this way. I planted those orange trees where I wanted them planted, and that's that. They've been there for 3 years, and they'll stay there.
Okay, okay, Mr. Nelson Whitmore. They're your oranges, and it's your land.
I don't know what's gotten into me, Mr. Regan, letting a few orange trees upset me this way. It's just that I don't like people digging around my yard.
That's a good idea. Never know what they might turn up.
What's that?
Nothing. I understand you and your wife were with Lois McMurray when she sailed for South America a few years back.
Lois? I'm afraid I didn't get the name.
Mrs. Jonathan McMurray. Lois. Used to work for you.
Why, yes. Yes, of course. Been so long since she left us.
For South America, that is.
Yes, South America. Yes, my wife and I went with her to the boat.
Funny thing, you know, her husband claims she's dead.
Her husband?
Jonathan McMurray.
Yes, of course, the architect. Blundering idiot if ever I met one.
You like people, don't you?
I like decent people, not narrow-minded biggers like that McMurray fellow. He's still living in the dark ages.
Now, but as far as his wife's concerned, Lois, she's gone. Out of the country.
Yes. As far as I know, it was 3 years ago. Yes. 3 years ago this week.
Maybe there's more.
More? What else do you mean, Mr. Regan?
More than you know that you aren't telling me. Like, why did she suddenly leave for South America?
Mrs. McMurray sailed to South America with an admirer.
In other words, she ran out on her husband.
Precisely. Not that I could blame the poor girl. McMurray never gave her a divorce. She was literally forced into it.
Mm-hmm, it all fits. Except for one little item.
Yes?
McMurray claims he shot his wife on April 3rd. You claim she sailed for South America April 4th. Somebody's lying. Somebody was lying. A decorator named Nelson Whitmore, or an architect named McMurray. Or maybe it was a bigger switch. Both of them lying. Maybe the answer to that one would be with a fire-breathing redhead named Mrs. Nelson Whitmore. She'd said she'd be home in Encino. It was an invite I wasn't going to pass up. I got out there around 5:30, the sun dropping down behind the valley hills, the grass around the place soft and moist, and the 10 orange trees lining the driveway to Mrs. Nelson Whitmore's house. It was redwood siding, sprawling over a hillside, weaving around like a giant snake. Ranch type for millionaires. Complete with gravel driveway, four-car garage, and swimming pool. I rang the doorbell.
Hello, Mr. Regan. I knew you were too intelligent to turn down my invitation.
Red hair, red dressing gown, same texture. Soft and silky. A film of expensive gauze covering golden tan skin.
This way, Mr. Regan. The drinks are mixed.
You thought of everything.
If we don't think of ourselves, no one else will. Or does that sound like a bromide? Sit here.
Nice furniture.
Herman Miller, Mr. Regan. Foam rubber throughout. You didn't come to discuss furniture, did you?
I came to discuss a friend of yours, Mrs.
Claire.
Her name's Lois. Lois McMurray.
Hmm?
Lois McMurray. You know her. Quit stalling.
Am I stalling, Jeff?
Can't take you that long to think up an answer. Why do you want those orange trees moved?
Your mind does travel, doesn't it?
That's still no answer.
Oh, very well, Jeff. You're being a cad, you know, a real cad.
I get paid to be a cad.
You're a private detective? I thought so.
Look, Claire, there's a big fancy game in progress. Somebody's playing somebody else for a sap. I get paid to find out who. By the hour.
That must make you terribly expensive, Jeff, who paid you.
Uh-uh. Wrong pitch, lady. Give me answers instead.
Have it your way. I want the orange trees moved because I want them moved. I don't have to answer for that to you or to my husband.
It couldn't be because you think there's something under the ground you ought to know about.
Oh, what a fantastic idea.
Keep talking.
I won't be questioned this way. Do you hear?
Lois McMurray didn't leave on any boat for South America, did she?
Get out.
You and your husband are lying, aren't you?
Get out of my house!
I got out. Out of the Redwood Mansion. out down the gravel driveway past the orange trees toward my car when it happened. Inside the living room, the smell of cordite, and behind the thick blue clouds stood Mrs. Claire Nelson Whitmore. Stood staring at me, a dazed look on her face, a gun hanging limp in her hand. At her feet, the haughty little man named Jonathan McMurray, dead. Claire Nelson Whitmore looked at me, blinked twice, then collapsed unconscious at my feet. It started when the Lion and I were hired by a self-righteous little man named Jonathan McMurray. He claimed he'd shot his wife 3 years ago and wanted us to prove it. Only I met an interior decorator and his wife who claimed they'd seen the McMurray woman leave on a boat for South America, very much alive. The only thing that made sense was that I was standing in the living room of the decorator's wife, Claire Nelson Whitmore, and she was lying unconscious at my feet. And next to her was my client, Jonathan McMurray. Not unconscious. Dead. I called Lieutenant Cantor down to police headquarters and waited for Claire Nelson Whitmore to supply some answers.
Thanks. Thank you, Jeff.
You killed McMurray?
He came at me after you left the house. He came through the back door. He had a gun.
You had a gun?
I was frightened. Just before you got here this afternoon, I heard a noise. I thought it was a truck backfiring from the highway.
But it scared you enough to get a gun.
He shot first. Mr. Regan, he shot first.
Yeah, he shot and missed, and then you fired back.
I had to, Mr. Regan. I had to. It was self-defense.
There's two guns on the floor, Claire. Yours and McMurray's. Both of them hot. The police will decide.
Police?
Well, you could save some time by talking now.
Jeff, I'm confused. I'm terribly confused. I don't know where to turn.
Well, that makes sense.
I didn't mean anything earlier today. I didn't mean anything, Jeff.
All in fun. A great big pitch like that. All in fun.
It was self-defense. I shot him in self-defense.
Police.
Oh, Jeff, you gotta believe me.
Uh-uh, not me, lady. The police. They're the ones who gotta believe you. Lieutenant Candid came in with a photographer and three detectives. An ambulance showed up a couple of minutes after that with a medic and two stretcher bearers. I gave Candid the whole story. The business about the orange trees included. He listened, nodded for one of the detectives to take notes, and then told me to stick around. He and another guy went into Claire Nelson Whitmore. 10 minutes later, he came back out.
Stayed a near collapse. Couldn't get much, Regan.
I thought maybe.
The dead man's gun had been fired twice, and hers three times. She wasn't hit, Regan.
She didn't say anything about McMurray's wife, Lois.
Nope. Nothing you hadn't already told me. Just one thing bothers me, Regan.
Just one thing?
Those orange trees. Why does she want to move?
Well, she says they look better somewhere else.
You think it's as simple as that?
I don't think anymore. I gave it up when McMurray hired me. If you're looking for logic in this one, Candid, forget it.
She's an awful good-looking dame, Regan.
Yeah?
I'm partial to redheads.
Sure.
Redheads and oranges. Regan? I think I'm going to dig for oranges.
You figure it that way, huh?
Lois McMurray disappeared 3 years ago, and that's when the orange trees were planted.
Howard Nelson Whitmore, the redhead's husband, made a special point of telling me that, Candid.
Oh, now, Regan.
He laid it out like a bad joke in a comedy routine.
You mean you think he deliberately wants us to
Look,
think
Candid,
that...
you dig. I'll try another idea.
Okay, Regan. I'll dig.
Candid called the city, and the city sent out the diggers. Maybe I was off base. Maybe I'd had too many weird stories for one day. But the orange tree routine smelled as phony as Limburger in a perfume shop. I called my boss, the Lion.
Yeah? Anthony J. Lyon Detective Agency. Anthony
Me,
J.
Me, Fatso. Get your pencil.
Jeffrey, I've been trying to get in touch with you.
Okay, you have.
Jeffrey, that McMurray fella called here about 2 hours ago.
What?
Jonathan McMurray. He told me to tell you to forget everything.
He told you that?
Yes, he said something about going back to San Francisco, that divine law would right the wrongs or something like that.
Lyon, are you sure?
Is something wrong, Jeffrey?
Just one little thing, Fatso. McMurray's here with me now.
Oh, good. I wanted to ask him about...
Dead, Fatso.
Well, tell him for me... Dead? No.
Yeah. Now, listen, Lyon, I've got an idea. I'll need your help. I want a complete check on Lois McMurray, Jonathan's wife. I want to know where she was born, how many kids in the family, if her parents are living, where she met her ex-husband,
Jeffrey,
everything.
Jeffrey, are you out of your mind? Our client's dead, and besides...
Don't argue, Fatso. Just get busy.
Yeah, but Jeffrey...
McMurray gets his money worth, Fatso. Dead or alive. I went outside. Candid was watching the diggers. How many trees, Candid?
Well, we dug up 4 of them. 6 to go.
Find anything?
Dirt.
Still hopeful, huh?
Still hopeful. I called Howard Nelson Whitmore's office. He'd left there a couple of hours ago. Just after you did, his secretary said.
Think he left for Point South?
I don't know, Regan. I don't like it, any of it.
Mm-hmm. Except the redhead. You're partial to redheads, remember?
I'm looking for a blonde now. A deceased blonde.
Who left for South America. You told me about it.
All right, so maybe she didn't leave for South America. Maybe she's dead, Regan. Dead and buried. Buried under one of those orange trees.
No, that's a good guess.
You got anything better to offer?
Nope. See you around, Candid. That's when I got an idea. A halfway idea that kept growing until it was a big, full-blooded 100% idea. Claire Nelson Whitmore said she'd heard a noise, like a truck backfire from the highway. She said that's why she'd gotten out the gun. Maybe she was telling the truth. Maybe there was one story in the tangle of lies you could believe. I decided to believe it, and that was an answer in itself. Behind the house, the garage was built for 4 cars. It was loaded. Servants' quarters, and then... over a couple of yards, swimming pool. I headed that way, checking the garage, trying the door to the servants' quarters, finding bushes, shrubs with nothing behind them. Up the hill, the swimming pool. Quiet. Still like a mirage in the desert. Emerald pool, tile and brick. Oval shape. Expensive. Claire wasn't lying. She'd heard that noise. I found her husband, Howard Nelson Whitmore, in the swimming pool. In the swimming pool with a hole in his back. Candid and his boys puffed up the hill to the pool in a hurry when they caught my signal, and I went down. Down to the house, to the room of Claire Nelson Whitmore.
Jeff!
Don't get up, lady. You and I are going to have words.
But, Jeff, you know how bad I feel.
Yeah, you may feel worse.
But the police said I could rest.
Yeah, that was before they found your husband dead in the swimming pool.
Hey, what?
You didn't know about that, huh?
Howard in the swimming
pool. When they pulled him out, they found a bullet in his back.
Oh, no. Oh, no, Jeff. I didn't do it. I didn't do it.
There's no answer, lady. The whole thing comes in one big package. You tied the ribbon on it. Give me the phone.
No, Jeff, no, I didn't
I can tell you a few things, baby, but I want to be sure. Real sure.
But, Jeff, I...
Just give me the phone.
Yes, Jeff? The phone?
I gave the operator the number, and the red-headed woman sat frightened on the bed while I talked. Her eyes looked at me, cutting deep, staring through the tension, knowing what was happening and hoping it wouldn't happen. I got the Lyon, and I got my answer, while the red-headed woman sat staring at me on the bed.
Jeff, what did you find out?
About Lois McMurray?
Mm-hmm.
What I thought I'd find out. That she's from Chicago. She has no brothers or sisters. But her parents are both dead.
She's alive.
Yeah. She's alive.
And Jeff, what does it matter about her?
Lois McMurray met Jonathan in Chicago just after she got out of prison. McMurray made her his project for the year. Salvation, his version of it.
She married him.
She married him. Because she didn't know what else to do. She married him because girls with prison records don't have a lot of choice. She married him and he converted her.
Go on, Jim.
He taught her to live a decent life, as he called it. She was his project, remember? The straight and narrow.
She didn't love him. She never loved him.
Who could? But she was a confused woman. She needed something, somebody. She got little Jonathan McMurray, crackpot crusader.
Oh, she got him, Jim. Then she learned to hate him. Hate everything about him. Hate his pettiness, his cruelty, his self-righteous conceit.
But he wouldn't give her a divorce. That was wrong. She didn't appreciate his good deeds.
She hated him, Jeff. She hated him.
Yeah, Lois. You hated him. And then you met Howard Nelson Whitmore. He was the opposite of McMurray. Clever, crafty, and in love with you. He cooked up a scheme whereby you could get rid of Jonathan. He framed up that burglar routine. Jonathan fired at a shadow that night 3 years ago. Only when the lights came on, you were on the floor playing dead.
I had to, Jeff. Don't you see? I had to. I couldn't stand it anymore, living that way, being a prisoner of the man I hated. Anything was better than that.
And just like Howard figured, Jonathan ran. He ran a long way.
But he came back, Jeff. Why did he have to come back?
Because he wanted to make an example of himself. You and Howard spoiled that. You were alive, not dead. That infuriated him. His one chance in life to be a martyr, and you and Howard ruined it for him.
That's why...
That's why he shot Howard and then came after you. Vengeance. The wrath of the righteous. Divine law, he called it. He was going to be a martyr after all.
Jeff, you know that I didn't shoot first. You know it was him, Jonathan, mean, hateful.
Mrs. Whitmore, Lieutenant Candid wants to see you.
Jeff.
And when I came around, Howard Nelson Whitmore got scared of his story about seeing Lois leave for South America. He knew he couldn't make it stick, so he tried that orange tree routine while I was in his office. Figured the cops might dig, but they'd never find a body. No corpse, no crime. It's the whole story, lady. You dyed your hair red, no relatives to identify you. You forgot about being Lois McMurray.
She's dead, Jeff. Please, let her stay dead.
All right, Mrs. Whitmore, open up.
That's it, Lois. Candid's no dumbbell.
Jeff, he doesn't know that I... No one knows.
But me. I know. I'll testify for you, Lois. But I won't lie for you.
All right, open up that door.
You've got hands, Candid. Open it up yourself. They took Lois McMurray down to headquarters and got the full story from beginning to end. Sure, she was booked on a couple of accounts, but nowhere in it could they stick a murder charge. That made Lieutenant Candid an unhappy man. After all, he figured maybe the chief would begin to think he was partial to redheads. But when I got to the office the next morning, my boss, Anthony J. Lyon, looked as cheerful as a kid with the measles. Hi, Fatso.
Oh, hello, Jeffrey.
Nice day, Lyon. Real nice day.
Is it, Jeffrey? I didn't notice.
What's eating you? We just wrapped up a $100 case. Just like that.
Yes, Jeffrey, I know. A $100 case.
Wait a minute, Fatso. We did get paid, didn't we? McMurray may have been a murderer, but not paying would be something else to him. You know, a sin to cheat.
Yes, Jeffrey. Mr. McMurray didn't plan to cheat us. In fact, he said he'd send me the money later.
Later? Look, when I left the office this morning, he had his checkbook out and you were reaching for your fountain pen.
Jeffrey, I tried to tell you on the phone. There was a mistake in the contract. Well, he wanted his lawyer to... there was a legal question. Jeffrey, I ran out of ink.
Jeff Regan, Investigator, is written by William Frug and William Fifield, produced and directed by Sterling Tracy, and stars Frank Graham as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. Original music is by Dick Arant. Bob Stevenson speaking, inviting you to be with us again for more suspense and mystery and adventure with Jeff Regan, Investigator.
I like Jack Webb better than Frank Graham. I thought Graham did a nice job. I thought Jack Webb was perfect for that role. In any event, April 5, 1950, and Jeff Regan, Private Investigator.
We're going to move along now to a show we don't play as often as perhaps we should. This is from the syndicated Maisie series with Ann Southern as Maisie, and it's from April 27, 1950.
Hiya, babe. Say, how about...
Does that answer your question, buddy?
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. You all remember Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's famous Maisie pictures. In just a moment, you'll hear Maisie in radio, starring the same glamorous star you all went to see and loved on the screen, Ann Southern. And now here's Ann Southern as Maisie.
Yep, I'm Maisie, like the fella said, Maisie Revere, from Brooklyn. High dramatic Maisie, you might call me. Ever since I can remember, I've been shifting for myself. Originally, I'm from show business, but the last vehicle I was in closed after 5 performances. So I had to do something to live, and as luck would have it, I came across an ad in the paper that said, Secretary wanted to assist author, little knowledge of typing and shorthand required. So I applied for the job. After all, I couldn't think of anybody who had a littler knowledge of typing and shorthand than me. Anyway, the professor agreed to try me out, and gosh, I'm so nervous. Today's my first day on the job, and I just gotta make good.
Miss Revere? Miss Revere? Come, we have some dictating to do.
Well, just a minute, Professor Elliot. I'm in the kitchen here washing your dishes.
Well, you've been in there an hour, Miss Revere. Aren't you finished washing those dishes yet?
No, but I'm up to last Thursday's breakfast, I think.
Never mind that for now, Miss Revere. We have a chapter on atrophication due to atomic radiation to dictate this morning. Do come out of the kitchen, please.
But, Professor...
I insist. Drop what you're doing at once.
Okay.
Miss Revere, what was that?
I dropped what I was doing.
Oh, well, you needn't have taken me so literally. Now, are you ready to take some dictation?
Yes, as soon
good.
As I...
Atrophication due to atomic radiation. Recent tests at Kwajalein and other Pacific Islands have proved that humans and animals exposed to atomic bombings on microscopic examination have displayed unmistakable evidence of atrophy of the... Any question, Mr. Revere?
Well, just one, Professor.
Yes, yes, what is it?
Do you have a pencil?
A pencil?
Well, it makes taking dictation much simpler, you know.
Yes, so the rumor goes. Yes. Secretaries oft-times bring pencils with them, Miss Revere.
I know, but gosh, I was so excited about this job, and when you're excited, you can't remember everything, you know.
How true. Well, here's a pencil, Miss Revere.
Thank you.
You ready now?
Shoot.
Don't tempt me. Now take this down. Atrophication due to atomic radiation. Recent tests at Kwajalein and other Pacific Islands have proved that humans and animals exposed to atomic bombings on microscopic examination have displayed unmistakable evidence of atrophy of the limbs. Got that, Miss Revere?
Well, all except one thing, Professor.
Oh, what's that?
What came after atrophication?
Is that all you got, Miss Revere? Just the first word?
Well, it was a big one, and by the time I got through writing it
out... Miss Revere, you're supposed to be a secretary. Can't you write shorthand?
Well, of course.
Good. Now, let's start from the beginning.
Shorthand takes me longer.
It does, eh? Well, beggars can't be choosers, I guess.
How true.
Take this down in longhand. I'll want 2 copies.
Oh, yes, Professor.
And the typewriter's over there. Mm-hmm. Now, let us continue. Atrophication due to atomic radiation. Have you got that, Miss Revere?
Yes. Atrophication due to atomic radiation. Now, wait till I get another sheet of paper. Atrophication due to...
Miss Revere, exactly what are you writing on the second sheet?
Well, the same thing as on the first. You said you wanted 2 copies.
Typewritten copies, Miss Revere. Typewritten.
Oh.
Now, wait a moment. You can type, can't you?
I think I'll go in and clean up those broken dishes now. They might bring ants, don't you think?
Miss Revere, without a knowledge of shorthand and typing, how did you expect to hold a position as a secretary?
Well, you're going to hate me when I tell you this, Professor.
Probably.
But I didn't think there was any hurry about getting down what you dictate. According to the mail on your desk, the publishers don't seem to be in a hurry to publish your books.
They're fools, Miss Revere. Blind, unseeing fools. All they're interested in is cheap trash to feed love-starved souls.
Well, there are an awful lot of love-starved souls, Professor. That trash you're talking about brings a little sunshine into their lives.
I'm trying to bring light into their lives, too, Miss Revere. Make them see that unless civilization takes time out to examine the direction it's taking, there might soon not be a civilization to examine. Oh, sometimes I think maybe I'm insane trying to aid humanity. Sometimes I think it isn't worth saving.
Oh, but it is, Professor, and you mean you're trying to make this world a better place to live in?
Miss Revere, you were never a soldier, were you?
No. I don't think I could pass the physical.
Miss Revere, please, I'm serious. I was in the war. The war to end wars, the greatest war in the history of mankind. A very expensive war. $500 billion it cost.
Gosh, that much.
Yes.
That's an awful lot of money, Professor.
We complain about the high cost of living instead of the high cost of dying. It doesn't make much sense, does it?
No. No, it doesn't. You mean, if we took that $500 billion and spent it on people instead of guns...
There'd be no reason for wars, nothing to fight about.
Gee, that's wonderful.
Well, I hope the publisher I sent the first few chapters to thinks so, Maisie. Oh, come in.
Good morning, Professor. I got some mail here for you.
Oh, thank you, Harry.
Okay.
Miss Revere, this is Harry, the elevator boy. Harry, Miss Revere.
Hello, Harry. I thank you.
That big envelope is from a publisher, Professor. Good news, I hope, at last.
Not good, huh?
He's returning my manuscript.
Oh, gosh, Professor, that's too bad. I had hoped that this one would sell. Manager's been getting mighty anxious about the rent, you know.
Well, tell him he'll get his money as soon as the professor's book is sold. What's it called, Professor?
Maisie, I'm calling it off.
You are? See, that's sort of a short title for a book. Don't you think so, Harry?
Yeah, and it's easy to remember, too. Off by Professor Hillary Elliott.
I mean I'm not going ahead with a book. I'm through with writing. Finished. Over.
Oh, but you can't do that, Professor.
Oh, Professor, you can't just chuck it now.
Oh, but I am. I'm going to make money, you hear me? Lots of it. And live in a decent place, not like this upholstered dust bowl.
But, Professor, success ain't measured by how much you got. It's what you got to give.
Well put, Miss Revere. Well put.
I thought so.
Yeah, but unfortunately, success nowadays is gauged in terms of intrinsic values.
Yeah, the professor is right, I think.
I mean in terms of worldly goods. Ha!
What's so funny?
I was just remembering that tomorrow is the anniversary of my entrance into the wide world. 10 years ago, I graduated from college. And my classmates chose me as the man most likely to succeed.
Well...
Yes. Harry, tell the manager I'll pay him somehow. I'm leaving tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight?
Well, what's the hurry? Can't you start starving to death next year?
No, I go tonight. Because tomorrow night I'm invited to an alumni dinner.
Oh. You don't like alumni. They don't taste good, maybe, huh?
Oh, they're delicious. But at that dinner, one person will be named top man of his class. That means the one who has accomplished the most since graduation.
Oh, and you're sad because you think it might not be you, huh?
Because I know it won't be me, and I can't blame them. Well, bye now. I'll be back for my thing.
Well, now, look, Doc, don't go now. Let's kick this thing around a little longer, say for a couple of years.
Yeah, sure, Doc. What's your hurry?
Because I'm expecting a fellow graduate to pop in on me today to inquire about my financial assets. I want to save myself the embarrassment of emptying out my pockets and showing him.
Uh-oh. Oh, gosh, Miss Revere. The professor scrammed in such a hurry, he ripped his coat on the doorknob. He's going to look even less successful now.
Harry, I've got an idea. The professor is discouraged about his work because he ain't had no recognition, right?
Right. And he's disgusted with himself because one of them alumnuses of his graduating class is going to find it out when he gets here.
Well, that's where you're wrong, chum.
You mean you got a plan to keep the doc from running away, Maisie?
Mm-hmm, that I have, Harry. When that man comes from the professor's college class to check on his financial position...
Yeah?
Doc Elliott's going to be the most successful guy he ever heard about.
You mean... You're going to make him think the professor is rich?
Rich? Harry, when that guy gets a load of the professor's muscles, he's going to think he got him from carrying his money to the bank.
Here you are, sir. Fourth floor.
Thank you, son. What's the number of Professor Elliott's apartment, please?
401, right across the hall, sir. Say, pardon me, you must be the one Maisie's expecting.
Maisie?
Yes, sir, Maisie Revere, the professor's secretary. She said to show you right into the joint when you arrive. This way, please.
Mm-hmm. Look, son, I don't know who this Maisie person is expecting, but I am from the Treasury Department.
Huh?
And I'm here to check on Professor Elliott's last tax report.
Oh, you're not from the college? I mean that aluminum stuff?
No, just that gold and silver stuff.
Gold... Gosh, you mean the professor owes the government money?
No. As a matter of fact, his report showed so little income, he has a refund coming to him, I believe. I'm just here to check further.
Oh.
Hello, Harry. Sir, I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, but I was busy fixing up my stockings. Cheap pair, you know. Every time I walk, they run. This is the fellow, Harry?
I'd like to talk to you, Maisie.
I'll talk first, son. Bit of a hurry, you know. Miss Revere, my name is Hinchley. I'm here to ask a few questions about Professor Elliot's income.
Oh, I'm glad. Come in, Mr. Hinchley. I've got plenty to tell you.
Thank you.
But, Maisie, this man is here about money. He wants...
the professor to contribute something for charity. But I'm sorry, Mr. Hinchley. I don't think the professor can.
Oh, boy, that was close.
Well, you see, Mr. Hinchley, the professor has to stop sometime. Last year, he gave $1 million to charity.
Oh, my goodness.
Professor Elliot gave a $1 million to charity?
Maisie, you're making a mistake.
Oh, yes, how silly of me. He didn't give $1 million at all.
No.
No, it was $2 million.
Oh.
Harry, Mr. Hinchley knows how many O's in $2 million.
Miss Revere, what you tell me is rather difficult to believe.
Yeah, ain't it? I mean, don't judge Professor Elliot's wealth by this scrubby apartment. All billionaires are eccentric, you know.
Billionaires?
Why I said what you tell me is hard to believe, Miss Revere, is because we understood Professor Elliot's income for last year to have been only $2,000.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
$2,000 a day.
Oh, fine.
You see, he doesn't pay taxes to the government. He just calls them up every year and asks them how much they need.
Amazing. The professor ain't gonna like this.
I know, but he's very modest about being filthy rich. But I think people should know how successful he is. Don't you, Mr. Hinchley?
Oh, yes, indeed. Miss Revere, there's one other person I'd like you to tell about Elliot's fabulous income. My superior.
Oh, you mean the head of the investigating committee?
Yes, you might call him that. And Mr. Jones.
Uh-huh.
He'll be around to check further on Diamond Jim's enormous wealth. Now, goodbye now, and thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Hinchley, and I hope you'll recommend that the professor gets everything he deserves.
I think you can count on that, Miss Revere. Yes. Well, good day.
Harry? What did he mean by that last remark?
That's sort of obvious, ain't it? Oh, you sure fixed the professor up good.
You mean you think they'll choose him? From now on, he'll be a somebody, a name?
No, a number.
Harry, I don't get it.
Maisie, I've been standing here trying to tell you all along that Hinchley ain't from the College Aluminum Committee. He's from the Income Tax Department.
Income tax?
Sure.
Oh, my gosh. And he believes all those lies about the professor's income.
Yeah, he was here to refund dough on last year's tax. Now they'll probably send him to jail for defrauding the government with a false tax return.
Oh, Harry, I got the prof into this mess, and I'm going to get him out of it.
How?
Well, there's only one way to do it.
One way? What's that?
You got any ideas?
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern, will continue in just a moment. And now back to Maisie.
Let us come to order now, gentlemen. Thank you. Fellow alumni, I'm pleased to announce the results of the votes to choose the most successful member of our good old class.
Here.
By unanimous agreement, the committee has decided upon Professor Hillary Elliot.
Chairman Jensen, I should like to congratulate the committee on our choice. Of course, others of our esteemed class have been more successful financially in the 10 years since graduation than our confrere, Dr. Elliot. But after all, there must be something more important than money.
Like what, Mr. Cabot?
That's a very good question. In the many years since I've known
Professor
Elliot...
I'll answer that question, Mr. Cabot. Humanity is more important than money, Brother Graduate.
Hear, hear.
And Dr. Elliot deserves the honor of being selected the most successful graduate of our class... because of the many great works he has written to make this world a better place in which to live. Mr. Cabot.
Yes, Mr. Chairman?
I now appoint you as a committee of one to call upon Professor Elliot and we'll check on his financial status.
Financial status?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought money wasn't important.
True.
But before we bestow this great honor on Dr. Elliot, we must ascertain whether he is, well, that is, that he isn't,
Make sure that he ain't no bum.
Yes. We must make sure that the good doctor has some source of revenue.
Very well, Chairman Jensen. I'll check on Elliot and report back to the committee later in the day.
Hear, hear.
I don't know about your plan, Maisie. Are you sure you know what you're doing?
But you know me, Harry.
Answer the question.
Okay, I'm sure.
Good.
Now, look. That man from the tax department said his superior was coming back for further details. And we've got to make sure he gets the impression that I made a mistake and that the doc is broke.
Uh-huh.
Uh-oh. That's his superior now. Now, Harry, remember, we got to make him believe that the professor hasn't got a pot.
Yes.
Well, never mind. Come in.
Good afternoon. I'm looking for Professor Elliot.
What for, Bob?
Well, I was sent here to check on his financial condition.
Ah. That bum owe you dough, too?
Bum? I was under the impression that Professor Elliot was doing fairly well financially.
Fairly well? You hear that, Harry?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That guy ain't got a dime.
Nah, when he goes to the park, they change the signs from do not walk on the grass to do not eat the grass.
But this office of his...
Oh, it's all going back to the finance company. They sent me here to take back the stuff, Bub.
Sure, he hasn't made a payment on it for 8 months.
Oh, that's hard to believe.
How about 6 months, then?
I was led to believe...
Look, the poor professor can't make both ends meet.
He can't even make one end meet.
Poor Professor Elliot spends all his time in the park by the lake.
Oh, but
and
I'm
watching the kids throw stale bread to the ducks.
Yeah, it's a good thing he can outswim the ducks, or else he'd starve.
Oh, I've heard enough.
Thank goodness.
Poor chap, this certainly changes everything as far as Professor Elliot is concerned. Good day. I have to make my report. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
The same to you, signor.
Oh, I'm terribly... Pardon me, sir. I didn't see you coming. Sam Cabot, of all people.
Oh, hello, Elliot.
I'm glad I ran into you, Sam. Say, how about a cup of coffee?
Oh, sure, Elliot. For a fellow classmate, anything. Here's a dime.
What is this?
Oh, you needn't be so proud with me, Elliot. I know.
Know what?
About how broke and hungry you are. Too bad, too. Now I'm afraid your election as most successful man of our class is out.
You mean... You were going to choose me?
Yes, on your literary achievements. But when that girl in your office told me that you were, a pauper, well, you know how it is.
No, but I'm going to find out.
Oh, hello, Professor. What's the matter? You look like you just lost your best friend.
No, Miss Revere, but you're close. I only lost the honor of being elected the most successful man of my class. Miss Revere, why did you do it?
Do what?
My dear young lady, I wasn't born yesterday.
Well, of course not. You couldn't have grown so much in one day.
Why did you tell that man that I was a pauper?
Ah, oh, you mean the investigator?
Yes, for the Alumni Award Committee.
Alumni Award Committee? Oh, gosh. I thought he was from...
From where?
I refuse to answer that until I talk to my lawyer.
Miss Revere, I'm expecting an answer. What is this all about?
I'm afraid to tell you, Professor. But I will when you're alone.
I'm alone now.
No, you're not. I'm with you. Have you got everything set, Harry?
Yeah, I sure have, Maisie.
All right.
I fixed up a dozen telegrams congratulating Professor Elliot on the great books on peace that he wrote.
Okay.
I got them from Yale,
mm-hmm.
Harvard,
mm-hmm.
Princeton,
mm-hmm.
William and Mary.
William and Mary who?
That's a college, Maisie.
Oh, yes, of course. I wanted to make sure that you knew.
Maisie, I still don't understand how you persuaded that Mr. Jensen to come here.
Oh, it was easy. I just got down on my knees and begged him.
Oh, you're wonderful, Maisie. He wouldn't come when I tried that.
Well, naturally. You don't have my needs. Come in.
Oh, good evening, Miss Revere. I'm here as you wished.
Oh, do come in, Mr. Jensen.
Miss Revere, you had some proof to show me of Professor Elliot's importance in the sciences.
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman. Here, take a chair.
Thank you.
Read these telegrams.
Oh. Very impressive.
Well, naturally. They were written by great brains.
Gee, thanks.
Shh, Harry. This one here, Mr. Jensen, was sent to the professor by the principal of Harvard, congratulating him on his work in splitting the atom.
Dr. Elliot split the atom?
Well, not exactly. He just cracked it a little.
Yeah, and after that, even a kid could split it.
With a toy hammer, I imagine.
Well, I'm back. I've got my ticket and everything. Jensen, what are you doing here?
He was just leaving, aren't you, Mr. Jensen, please?
No, I do believe I'll stay a while and read these other telegrams of congratulations.
Oh, but I'm leaving. I've got a dog to feed.
No, you don't, Harry Talbot. You don't have a dog.
I'll buy one and then feed it.
Miss Revere, what's this telegram thing all about?
Well, Professor Elliot, I cannot tell a lie.
You can't?
No, but I'm going to try. Professor Elliot, you're not going to believe this, but you've suddenly become quite famous.
Quite, Elliot. According to these telegrams, you are the idol of such chaps as Georgie Bernie Shaw.
Who?
King Gustav of Sweden.
Oh.
A half dozen college presidents, and Willie Shakespeare.
Shakespeare? He's dead and buried.
Tell him to move over. I'm going to be joining him. Look, Professor.
Now, you look, Miss Revere. Haven't you made enough of a
jerk?
Yes. Thanks. Oh, Maisie, you made enough of a fool of me without using telegrams from stooges to make it any worse.
But, Professor, all I wanted to do was... Come in. Professor Elliot, I know I'm not smart like you,
but...
Pardon me. My name is Jones. I'm looking for Professor Hillary Elliot.
I'm Elliot.
Good. I am head of the income tax department.
Oh, another stooge. Maisie, tell him the game is over. I don't want to play.
Well, look, Doc, I have a confession to make.
The Doc has the confession. When he intends to pay the $1 million he owes for last year's income tax.
Well, Elliot, this is interesting. $1 million tax.
Oh, that's silly. I don't owe $1 million.
No,
I owe $2 million. Or is it $3? Let's not be pikers.
Professor, shut up, will you? Visiting days are only once a week.
Now, look, Mr. Jones, you can drop your masquerade right now.
You'd better come with me, Professor Elliot. J. Edgar Hoover wants to meet you.
Go away, funny man, before I lose my temper.
Professor, will you listen to me?
No!
Elliot, for the last time, come along. I wouldn't want to use force.
Why not? I'm in the mood for it.
Well, you
are. Keep away from me, stooge. I'm warning you.
Professor!
Oh! Miss Revere.
I couldn't help it. She got in the way.
Maisie, are you all right? Speak to me. Say something.
Elliot, this wouldn't have happened if you hadn't lost your temper. I checked on this whole farce this afternoon. Miss Revere was merely trying to rectify the false impression she gave to the tax department.
What false impression?
Well, Mr. Jones, Professor Elliot neither earned a fortune last year, as you were led to believe, nor is he the pauper our alumni committee thought he was.
Gosh. And Maisie was just trying to...
Looks like it, Doc. She stuck her chin out for you plenty.
Yes. Poor child. Lying there so pale. So still.
So beautiful.
Maisie, open your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to me just once.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never give up my work. I'll turn out all the books you want me to.
Well, you put that in writing, Professor, and you've got a deal.
And now, once again, here's Maisie.
Well, I couldn't blame the professor for being mad. He had a perfect right. Gosh, my chin feels sore. That tax man had a perfect right, too. Well, it was worth it, though. Giving the professor the courage to carry on and help give this world a chance to at least break even with itself. You know, it's a funny thing. Just a few short years ago, all the civilized people in the world were fighting, and the cannibals were at peace. Makes you think a little, don't it? Well, I gotta get back to my room. I got some unfinished worrying to do.
You have just heard The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. Maisie Maisie was written by Arthur Phillips. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. Supporting cast included Gerald Moore, Howard McNear, Peter Leeds, Donald Wood, Junius Matthews, and Sidney Miller. Jack McCoy speaking.
The Adventures of Maisie from the syndicated series and Dan Southern, and that was all about Professor Elliot from April 27, 1950. Next week, we'll hear from Doris Day, Part 2, right here on Same Time, Same Station.